Welcome to the Change Your World Virtual Summit, brought to you today by the Public Speakers Association. I'm so excited to introduce to you the incredible Miss Sandy Mitchell. Sandy, why don't you take it from here?
Excellent. Thank you so much, Tanya. I appreciate it. So today's topic is Choose Your Way to Success, the Brain Science of Seeing Your Choice. I am such a neuroscience geek. I hope that you will absolutely enjoy this talk as much as I am. So what we're going to talk about today is understanding what happens in your brain when you get stressed, how you can take control of that process even faster, which enables you to see the better choices you can make, which propel you to the success that you desire. So let's start off with understanding what happens in your brain when you get stressed. When I was in India one time, I was doing some training there, and I came across this hysterical picture. I didn't get a picture of it, but I found one later on the internet, so assuming it happens a lot. There was this donkey that was connected to a cart, and the cart was so full that the cart was on the ground and the donkey was up in the air. I thought it was hysterical. So sometimes, don't you ever feel like that sometimes, that you're up in the air, you're struggling to get down, but the weight of your baggage has control over you? Those are what I call your inner critics. And your inner critics say things like, you're not good enough, you're not smart enough, you're not bold enough, you don't charge enough because you're not worth more. So you're not rich enough, or you're not thin enough, or you're not whatever enough. Those are your inner critics, that baggage that's holding you down, right? Every single one of these statements and whatever you may hear in your brain, they're simply your inner critics getting scared. So there's this war, right, between our inner critics and our inner genius. Our inner critics are, we really created them to keep us in our comfort zone, to keep us safe from harm or to hurt or even embarrassment. So they were actually created to help us, right? But it may not hold you where you want to go, but it's the devil you know, right? What really is your serving mind, so that was your sabotaging mind, right? What's your serving mind is your inner genius. This is that voice in your head that says, you can do this. I know you can do this. Give it a try. Come on. The goal for the inner genius is to propel you forward, to be your cheerleader, and to believe in you unconditionally. So here's what we want to talk about on the inner critics and the inner genius. How is it playing out in your brain, right? Because they are literally fueled by different regions in your brain. And whichever one you activate the most is the one that you strengthen. So the internal war between your inner critics and your inner genius, it's really tied to a war for domination between different parts of your brain. So we all know that there are different parts of our brain, right? And so what I want to do is talk to you a little bit about today, how that shows up, and then what you can do. So let's start off with a story. So let's say this happens to you, right? You're in an unfamiliar environment. It's late at night, so it's dark, and you notice some footsteps behind you. So you start to panic a little bit, and as you turn the corner on the street, you start moving faster. But the footsteps pick up speed as well. And you start to jog even a little faster, and they do too. And your body goes into fight or flight mode really quickly. And then they call out, hey, I think you dropped this. What happened to your body? What happened to your brain? Right? Your brain is this amazing thing. It's highly efficient. It pushes the unknown into known patterns. And it gives you what the brain anyway thinks is the right reaction to the event. So when we live our lives based on the patterns in our brains, what's happening is that we are actually abdicating our decision-making abilities to our subconscious. So, you know, there's various studies about this. And so the studies say that anywhere from basically 80 to 85% all the way up to 98% of our brain is the subconscious. So it can do things in the background that we're not even aware of, right? Such as your lungs are breathing and your heart's pumping and when something's coming towards your eyes just close without your brain even kicking in that, hey, something's coming at you. Think about the last time you drove home. And when you get to your garage, you realize that you don't even remember the drive home. That's your subconscious driving for you. So here's the good news. The good news is that this is designed so that you can think of important things. You can solve problems, et cetera, without the distraction of also having to remember to take that next step, to breathe, to blink, and even more. But if there's good news, there's always bad news, right? So the bad news is that it does so much for you that if you're not careful, you could actually live most of your day letting the subconscious make your decisions for you. So you think a lot of times of people who keep trying the same thing over and over. I think it was Albert Einstein that said that the definition of insanity is trying the same thing and hoping for a different result. That's your brain saying, oh, this is like this, so I will have you react the same way. That's letting the subconscious make the decisions for you. So when something happens and we get stressed, the first thing that happens in our body is that it goes into what the scientists have named the amygdala. Some people call it the reptilian or the survival brain. I call it the monkey brain because it goes crazy when it's faced with change or it's faced with stress. And it's not until the information travels up to the frontal cortex or that part right behind your forehead that the information actually becomes part of your conscious brain, not your subconscious brain. So what does all this mean to you, right? So here's the thing. When you get stressed, physiologically, what actually happens to your body is that your heart rate increases, your energy increases, your breathing starts to increase, your perspiration increases, your immune system increases, and your thinking capacity decreases. Why? It's because your body is preparing for fight or flight mode. And it moves all the oxygenated blood it can from the non-essential areas, including your brain, to the arms, the legs, and the chest so that you can actually fight or flee. So literally, you can't see that there's more than one option. Here's an example of what happens. So when you're in normal mode, when things are happy, when things are just the way they normally are, your peripheral vision allows you to see to the side about 180 degrees or all the way back to about 270. So you can see things from the corner of your eyes, right? You can see what's going on. What this shows is that you have a wide range of options and alternatives and things that you can see all at the same time. However, when you get stressed, your peripheral vision literally moves from that 180 to 270 all the way down to 30 degrees. This is why when you get stressed, you get that tunnel vision. Or when you get stressed, you may see that there's no options at all, which is typically why people flee. Or you may only have one option, which is why people think that, you know, fight. So you have literally blocked out all the other options, all the other alternatives, because your brain's oxygen has left. So when you're stressed, you're effectively prevented from taking in new information. You can't even see it. You are prevented from making decisions because there's either no choice or there's only one choice. So you don't have to make a decision. And then you're prevented from analyzing a problem effectively or thoughtfully. You've got to have your frontal cortex to do that. And it needs oxygen. So once you get oxygen back up to the brain, again, then your brain's braking system on that crazy monkey brain, it kicks in. So you can pause, you can evaluate, you can actually choose what you want to do instead of being forced to accept the only choice that you see available when you're in the monkey brain. All right, so now how can you take control of that process even faster? How do you get that oxygen back to your crazy reptilian monkey brain? The biggest things are some of the things that you heard as a kid, right? You pause. You take some deep breaths. You count to 10. Some people just walk away for a moment. Some people stretch. You can also ask yourself a question that requires a thoughtful answer. So what that's doing is pushing it out of your monkey brain into your frontal cortex, which makes the logic happen more. And it's not all emotion. All these things, they force the brain to slow down. It pushes the information being gathered unconsciously to your conscious brain so that you can actually analyze the information and you can make a decision. Basically, it means that you can respond versus reacting. So in order to have that higher order thinking that will enable your emotional intelligence to kick in, you've got to slow down that monkey brain enough to think through some important questions. So here's what I'd like you to do. We're going to take out some, if you have it around you, take out paper and pen, pencil, something that you can write on, because I've got an exercise for you that will help. You've got to understand what happens when you're being triggered. So think about it. When you get stressed, where does it show up in your body? In mine, it's my neck. My neck gets really tense and my jaw gets really tense. I have clients whose stress shows up in their eyes. Some clients, their eyes twitch. Others, they stop blinking. They're really focused in, right? I have some people who stress shows up in their lower back, or some people it shows up in their stomach. And you think people who do this for a long term, you know, they can get ulcers easily, right? Or I have some people that their face gets really red, or their ears get red. So where does stress show up in your body? Being able to recognize that is a clue, because your body is giving you a clue to say, hey, you're about to blow. Either blow forward or blowing backwards, right? So once you know that, you can start to track it. Okay, so then the second thing is then you can ask yourself, okay, what's triggering me? Typically, you think it's the other person, right? It's the other person that's triggering you. But really, it's that they either found your button. And here's the thing, a little tip for you. They did not create the button. You did. So when you allow someone to hit your button, you're giving power away to them. So part of this is being able to recognize, what are my buttons? And then how can I take that power away myself? Or it can be that they are pushing up against a value of theirs. So let me give you a little example of button pushing. So I have two younger sisters. I am dark-headed, blue-eyed, and my middle sister is too. My youngest sister is a blonde-haired, blue-eyed girl. And so from the time, of course, you know, little kids, we say mean things. From the time she was very little and could understand me, I would just tell her that she was adopted. And it was a big button for her, right? And so one time, my middle sister did something that made me mad, and I said, well, you're adopted too. And she goes, no, I'm not, and she just walked away. It was the exact same thing that I said to both sisters. One had a button triggered, one didn't. You have the power to take the power away from that button. So what is it so that you can say, okay, well, how important is this to me? Another thing that they're pushing up against could be a value of yours. So let's do a quick example of the exercise. So get your paper and your pens out, and let's do a quick information on this. So the first thing is that you can do this mentally or you can do it on paper, whatever works for you. Do this quick exercise. The first thing is, like, at the top of the paper, you just write down a couple of words that describe your stressful situation. You don't have to write anything elaborate. It doesn't have to be paragraphs, just a couple of words, right? Just enough so that you know what it is. So take just a moment and do that. Just write down a couple of words. What's a stressful situation that you are in the middle of, or has just happened, or you can anticipate happening in the next week? Okay, so now what I want you to do is draw three columns on the piece of paper. So you've got your words at the top to say, okay, here's a stressful situation that happens to me. You got three columns. The first column, I want you to label it assumptions. Now, in this column, what you do is you'll write down everything that you assume is true in this situation. And assumptions a lot of times have typically dramatic language, like always and never. For example, so-and-so is always late. They're always late to my meetings, and they don't respect what I'm doing, and they're always have terrible excuses. And so you've got all these different assumptions. My assumption is there's something going on at home, and they just can't get out, or they can't get up in time, or what my meeting is not important to them. So you write down all the assumptions for your stressful situation. Just write them down on the column on the left. Now that second column is what we'll call triggers. So assumptions was the first column, triggers is the second column. And in this column, what you want to write down is what each assumption that you just wrote down is actually triggering in you. So if they're always late, what is that triggering you? Does it trigger the belief that they should have a better work ethic? Is it triggering that they should have better control over their home life so they get to work on time? Is it triggering that they don't have respect for you if they don't think that your meeting is worth showing up on time? What are the triggers? What are the things that are your thinking that makes this irritating for you? Maybe it's something like they shot down your idea in a meeting, so that may trigger a belief that you've got pride in your work, and they make it sound as if your idea has no value at all. So what are the triggers? That's your second column. So the first column is assumptions. The second column is triggers. And the third column, we're going to label it facts, F-A-C-T-S. What are the facts? And just the facts. In this column, you're going to write down the items that are the truth and could be admitted in a court of law. So, for example, the person who is always late to your meetings, right? When you start to really think through the truth is that they were late twice in the last 3 weeks to your meeting. It's not quite always, but it's pretty close, right? But the fact is that they were late 2 out of the last 3 meetings. Or that when they shot down your idea that you gave, maybe a fact is that, well, they also gave you kudos for another idea that you had in a different meeting. So it's not all your ideas that they shoot down. So what you're able to do in this exercise, this quick little exercise, and like I said, you can do this in your mind or you can do it on paper. It really helps you to start to see where your assumptions of truth are and where the actual facts are. It enables you to see what's triggering you so you can find ways to be less triggered in the future. It enables you to take control of that monkey brain, which will enable you to make better decisions with more options. So another thing that you can do while you're in this analysis mode is to ask yourself a question such as, what else could be true? For example, in the story I told you, what was the person thinking? Probably that the footsteps behind were someone coming to get them, right? Well, ask the question, what else could be true? Well, it could have nothing to do with them, and the other person could have been just a jogger at night and they happened to be running behind you. It could actually have been a bad situation. But in order to respond appropriately, you have to know more of the story. Our brains, like I said, are so cool. They have to have the whole story. And if we don't have all the facts, it just makes them up. So these made-up stories are our assumptions that we just talked about. And so a lot of times, those assumptions may or may not be true. But if we don't focus on what are the facts, then we take our assumptions as truth. And it's not until you get all the information into your response part of the brain and out of the reaction part of your brain that you can actually see what's true and what's assumptions. Like I said, not every assumption that you come up with is false. Some of them are truth, but you need to have a little bit more information to really be able to weed out what are facts and what are assumptions. So what we just did was I took you through a managing your response process of 3 things. The first thing is pausing. Pausing is absolutely huge in being able to get you to a point where you feel like you have the ability to get oxygen back to your brain, right? You're able to manage your reaction by using this pausing, by taking a deep breath or taking some steps away or pausing to the work to make something safe. You're you're pausing a conversation that could be at risk if it continues on a downward spiral, right? Pausing just gives you that moment to move it from your monkey brain up to your conscious brain. So the second thing that we did to help you manage your response is talk about identifying triggers. This is your ability to separate fact from fiction, fact from the and from the situation, right? We are typically in a lot of our jobs, right? We're in a community of people who are who have a lot of respect and pride in their jobs and their culture. And when something happens that makes us feel threatened, we may be triggered into engaging into argument. So when you start to feel threatened like that, ask yourself, why do I feel threatened now? This is what that second column is, the triggers. Identifying the triggers enables you to start moving things over to your conscious brain, which enables you to start thinking about, okay, so now what's really truth, right? Why is this pushing a button in me? And then the third thing, so we've paused, we've identified triggers, and now you've got to own it, right? Being able to own that the trigger is our issue. When we're triggered, we don't take control, then we rarely own our side of it, so we start blaming other people and we give our power away. By by owning our response, we retain our power. So here's an FYI for you. If you are angry longer than 60 seconds, you're not really angry about this situation. You're angry about something in the past issues, your buttons, something that was similar to this. So being able to pause, identify the trigger, and then own it enables you to separate out this situation from all the things that have happened in the past. Here's the thing. You don't want to lose sight of the overall objective of the relationship because you fall into conflict, right? Remember, you don't have to take things on full force. Think about some of those martial arts, right? Some of those moves. Some of the powerful moves they have are the ones that they simply move to the side and let it or let the problem or let the anger or let the push to your buttons just simply go by. So being aware of where your wall is so you don't get pushed up against it is really important. And your wall is that wall of values, that wall of buttons, that wall that says, hey, you push me here and I'm going to get triggered. So pay attention to your body when it's signaling that something is coming. Pay attention to how long you're angry so you can determine if this is really this situation or something else. Pause. Identify your triggers and own your response. All of these will enable you to understand what happens in your brain when you get stressed, how you can take control of that process faster, pushing it from the monkey brain to the conscious brain, which will enable you to see the better choices you can make to propel you to the success that you desire. So if you'd like to learn more about this or other areas you can focus on to increase your ability to lead yourself and those around you, sign up for my virtual live workshop. It's called Igniting Inspired Leadership. It's a 1-hour a week for 4 weeks workshop. It starts next Tuesday, October 6th at 7 p.m. Central Time. You can simply go to apexleadershipcoaching.com. That's APEX leadershipcoaching.com. And then go to the products page and you'll find out more about the workshop and the link to register to that. And if you sign up before the end of the day tomorrow, you get the early bird special. It's a 33% discount that I'm giving to you. You can also go to the homepage and click on your Get Your Free Genius Plan. This is a link to get 6 steps to increase that ability to tap into that inner genius that we talked about before. That's that conscious part of your brain, right, that will propel you to success. So you can reach out to me. Again, it's Sandy Mitchell, Sandy with an I. You can reach out to me at apexleadershipcoaching.com or on Twitter at Coach Sandy M, on Facebook, LinkedIn, and most of the other social media channels. I'd love to hear your thoughts, so please reach out to me. So, Tanya, here's to our success.